If one of the things that has kept you from leaving your draining job and pivoting to a new industry to do more fulfilling work is the fear of taking a pay cut, then you're going to want to listen to this episode because in this episode, I'm breaking down, first of all, why you think you need a pay cut to pivot into a new industry. I'm sharing step by step exactly what you need to do to keep your salary or get a raise in a new industry and sharing how to position yourself as a high value hire in a new industry without direct experience.
Welcome to the Fulfilling Career Podcast, a show for professional women ready to leave miserable jobs, stop being overlooked, and land higher paying roles they're excited about without compromising who they are. I'm Dr. Tega Edwin, a career counselor and coach who went from feeling unfulfilled and stuck at work to thriving in a career I've loved for over 10 years. Along the way, the professional awards, $3 million federal grant, and textbook I wrote are some evidence of the impact I've been able to have, all while building a coaching business to help women like you find fulfillment and have impact in their careers. Inside my programs, Find Your Fulfilling Career and Next Level Career, I guide women to clarify their path, land dream jobs, and negotiate salary increases with faith and confidence. Whether you're ready to leave a soul-sucking job or advance into your next level role, you're in the right place. Together, we'll uncover what's holding you back and help you step confidently into the career and life God has for you. Let's dive in.
Before we get started, if you are in a job that's draining you and you want to pivot into something that actually excites you while increasing your salary, I am opening enrollment for Find Your Fulfilling Career, my 12-month career clarity and job search coaching program. And this round, I'm including three brand new bonuses, including a one-on-one pivot call with me. I'll share all the details at the end, but I wanted to give you a heads up. So for now, let's get into today's episode. Hello, hello, wonderful listener. Welcome back to another episode of the Fulfilling Career Podcast. Okay, so if you have been working in your industry, just in the career, let's just say you've been a career professional for a while. How do I define a while? I think to me, a while is 8 or more years. So you've been working for 8 years, 10 years, 12 years, 20 years. You have probably, I hope, steadily increased your salary, at least somewhat. It might not be where you want it to be, or for some of you, it might be like you are currently making the most money you've ever seen in your life. So even though you are unhappy in your career, because you're making good money, the idea of pivoting right now feels scary because in your mind, making a pivot to a new industry means that you have to start over, you have to take a pay cut, or that you will lose all the salary progress you've made in your life so far. And I get it. Like when you're moving into a new field where you don't have direct experience, it's easy to think that you have to accept less money just to get your foot in the door. But that is definitely far from the truth. In fact, after helping multiple women make career pivots, making three career pivots by my own self, I know for a fact that you do not have to take a pay cut. In fact, you can increase your salary during a pivot to a more fulfilling career path. But I think it's important to first address why you think you need a pay cut to pivot into a new field, just so that you can reset your mindset. And so if you don't know this about me, my history, my background is as a counselor. So I worked as a counselor for over 2 years, and then I worked as a counseling professor for over 7 years where I was teaching and researching counseling. Why am I sharing that? I am very much a person who believes that your thoughts determine what you feel and what you feel determines what you do. I very much believe that the beliefs you have about yourself, about your career, will ultimately determine the outcomes you experience in your career. And so it is very important to even set the scene, set the stage with the right mindset, because you can have all the strategy in the world. But if your mindset is not on board with that strategy, you will not take the right actions to change your situation. And so by addressing why you think you need a pay cut to pivot to a new field, it helps sort of surface your own mindset, helps you see potentially what you either know you believe or what you didn't know that you believe, but you do believe, and so it's impacting your behavior. So the first reason that you might think you need a pay cut to pivot to a new field is that you think no experience means entry-level pay. You think that because you don't have any experience in a field or in an industry, that means you have to start from the beginning and get paid entry-level. What you're failing to realize is that you're not starting from scratch, you're starting from experience. Let me say that again. You're not starting from scratch, you're starting from experience. Just because you're changing industries doesn't mean that all your years of experience just magically disappear, poof, into thin air. No, those years that you have been working are what is going to allow you to bring value to the organization. Your 8 years, your 5 years, your 10 years, your 25 years, those are all years that you spent getting experience, developing skill sets, having accomplishments, and you're bringing all those into this new industry that you're coming in. You're not an entry-level employee, you're an experienced employee, and your transferable skills have value even in a new industry. So those years of experience are what are going to allow you to bring value to whatever new organization you pivot into, and you should get paid for them. You do not need to be getting paid entry level just because you're going in without directly relevant experience. Not having direct experience doesn't mean you don't have any professional experience at all. The second reason you might think that you need to take a pay cut is that you're going into a pivot from a place of settling gratitude instead of value. And I'm saying settling gratitude because I think oftentimes we can couch settling as just being grateful. I'm just grateful. That should just be grateful. And it's like, hold up, gratitude and value are not mutually exclusive. Gratitude and ambition are not mutually exclusive. You think you should just be grateful that they took a chance on you, so you might accept the first offer you get. Or maybe you're thinking, oh, in this job market, it's so hard. It's taking so long to get an offer. So you think you just have to take the offer and run before they snatch it back. But girl, they are not doing you a favor by giving you the job. They are hiring you to solve a problem, and you should be compensated for that value that you're bringing to solve a problem for them. Right? Like, have you ever hired someone to fix something in your house? Let's say, you know, a plumber, an electrician, something. And they come and they're like, well, ma'am, I'm done now. And I'm just so grateful you took a chance on me. I'm just so grateful you gave me this opportunity to fix your pipes. Pay me whatever you want. No. Like, I doubt that has ever happened to you. So it's like they came to your house, they offered value, they fixed the problem, and then you gave them the rate that they charged. That is the mindset that I want you to have. It doesn't matter if you have been in that industry or not. You were still hired for the job, which means the company definitely had a problem that they needed solved, and they thought you could solve it, which is why they're giving you the offer, and you should be paid a value-aligned salary even as you're going into the new job. And then the third reason why you might think you need to take a pay cut is that you don't know how to translate your experience into like an actual dollar value. And I get this, right? So because your experience is not directly connected to what you're pivoting into, right? Maybe you've solved different types of problems, you use different language, your degree is not directly related. It is very easy to think that, okay, the value is less or different, but you know that you have experience, right? You know that you've had accomplishments. The key now is to learn how to talk about them in a way that is valuable so that you don't settle in your career. And when I say talk about them, I mean when you think about your LinkedIn profile, your resume, your cover letter, networking conversations, interview conversations, even negotiating. The key is, how do you recognize that there is value in what you're bringing to the table and you deserve to ask for that value? Or what I often see sometimes happening is because you don't know the value of this role in this industry, you might think, you know what? Well, I'm making, you know, X dollars now, so I'll just ask for that. Even when you might be going into an industry that historically pays more for that role, you end up settling for something that is just similar to your last role, again, because you're just grateful you got an opportunity. But let me repeat, gratitude and value are not mutually exclusive. You can be very, very grateful for an opportunity while still asking to be paid what anybody else would be paid for that same opportunity while not lowballing yourself and taking a pay cut. So those are some reasons why you might think you need a pay cut. And one thing I will say is, this is something that I talk about in my Career Clarity and Job Search Coaching Program, Find Your Fulfilling Career, FYFC. We talk about the concept of your desperate energy versus your abundant energy. So how are you going into the job search? If you are just desperate to get any opportunity to just, you know, land a job, you're more likely to settle, you're more likely to blowball yourself, you're more likely to take an offer that will make you unhappy again, as opposed to when you step into your abundant energy, where you know that, hey, look, my heavenly father created the earth, so anything is available to me that is aligned with his will. You move differently. You move with more confidence. You see your value more confidently, and you step into rooms and ask for different amounts of money when you're not desperate to take whatever scraps they can give you. So if you don't have to take a pay cut when you pivot industries, how do you actually keep your salary or get a raise? Well, let me walk you through the exact process that I use with my clients and that I, you know, would recommend to you. First and most important is to know your numbers. So you need to clarify currently, like, what is your current salary and total compensation? So I want you to think about your base salary, your bonuses, your benefits, things like health insurance, if your company is matching your 401k or retirement, your PTO. Calculate the total value of everything you're currently making, not just your base salary. And this is very important because when it comes to job searching, asking for more money, a lot of times we can very easily fall into this sort of trap of just looking at the actual salary and ignoring all the other different ways that you indirectly get money in your pocket with an offer. So an example I always think of and like to give is, I remember one of my clients, when she got an offer, it was slightly less than her walk away, like the amount she wanted to make. But when we looked at the whole package, some of the things they were offering was a parking stipend and a childcare stipend. There were more things, obviously, but I like to talk about those two specifically. Well, whether or not they offered those things, she would have had to pay for parking. She lived in Seattle. And so just by nature of where her building was, she would have had to pay for parking. And because she had a kid and had to go to work, she would have had to pay for childcare. So those amounts would have come out of the desired salary that she had anyway. But when we looked at those stipends her company was giving her, it's like, oh, okay, this is indirectly putting money back in your pocket. And when you calculate the annual value, it actually brings your total compensation up above what you desire. So that's why I said it's important to clarify everything you're making right now, because I don't want you to forget about other ways you're getting money in your pocket. And then this is going to come in when you think about what you want to ask for when you make a pivot. So the first thing is to know your numbers. The second is to map out your realistic lavish budget. Okay. What is a realistic lavish budget? So I think about this as, it's not a bare minimum noodle budget. You know how when you're trying to hit certain financial goals, you know, you're often told to make a noodle, but like if you were going to eat noodle for a month, how much would you be, you know, making or saving? That's an extreme version. That's what I'm talking about. I'm talking about a budget that funds the life you actually want. So think a vacation fund, kids' activities fund, your savings goals, your investment contributions, occasional treats, your massages, your nails getting done, your hair appointment. That is a realistic, lavish budget, not a bare minimum. So I want you to like just go all out. Think about, what is my realistic, lavish budget? Be honest about what you need to feel financially comfortable and excited about your life, and map out those numbers. In my program, FYFC, we actually have a cost of living calculator that makes it super easy for you to do this, to create your realistic, lavish budget. But that's what you want to do. So you figure out your numbers now, you create your realistic, lavish budget, and then you're going to create your salary range based on that budget. And the way you're going to create your range is from two numbers, your comfort number and your lavish number. So because in step two, you already created a realistic, lavish budget, you can then go back and look at that budget and take away some things. What is the amount you need to make to pay all your bills, maybe save a little money and get occasional treats? This is your comfort, the number that you can comfortably live a good life with this amount. That's your comfort number. The lavish number is the full budget. You're hitting all your financial goals. You're investing, you're saving, you're living well, you're funding your dream lifestyle. And remember that I said this is a realistic, lavish budget. Like if I was creating this and I said, oh, I want to fly first class every month of the year. Girl, that is not realistic for me right now. Let's just be honest. I want you to be honest. Don't, like, I'm not, I didn't call this like your dream budget. No. Like in the real world, in your current situation, what is your version of a lavish lifestyle that you could live right now? So for example, if I was creating mine, I would put things on there like, you know, a weekly cleaning service, maybe like 2 first class trips a year. Being able to, what am I thinking of, buy kava twice a month because I love kava right now. But things like that, I wouldn't say, you know, 6 first class trips a month. That's not realistic for me right now. So when you have those numbers, your range is then your comfort to your lavish budget. So let's say you did your budget and the amount you need to be making to live a lavish lifestyle right now is $150,000, but we're not going to a noodle string budget. You're still paying bills, saving a little. You don't feel stressed. You don't feel strapped. And you're like, okay, I can do that on $110K a year. So 110. So now your salary range becomes, I need between $110,000 to $150,000. That is the amount you need to fund either a comfort or a lavish lifestyle right now. So you need that range because you're going to need that range to figure out the fourth step, right? So the first step was, what are your numbers right now? Second step, your lavish budget. Third step, your salary range. Then the fourth thing you need to do is set what we call in FYFC, your walk away number. This is a concept I teach in my coaching program called your walk away number. This is the number below which you will not accept an offer. Like your walk away number is anything below this, I am walking away from the offer. It's not good enough for me. I can't live life on this. And usually, some people end up doing their walkaway number based on a noodle budget, right? Like that. So let's say we said 110 was your comfort. Some people might say, okay, I can survive on 100. I would have to cut out some of my basic things, but 100K would work. You could do that. My recommendation is usually that your walkaway number is the middle of that range between your comfort and lavish number is your walkaway number. So let's say your range was 110 to 150K. You might then say, okay, my walkaway number is 130K. Now, that's just a recommendation, but ultimately it's up to you, right? Like what you can, again, you can say, you know what, at this stage of my life, I'll take a noodle budget number. I'll take the 100K. I'll take the 85K. You might say, no, I want the lavish. I'm already making good money. I want to go up. I want the 150. Totally up to you. I'm just giving you a way to think about ultimately getting to this walkaway number that you are going to set. Because this number becomes your negotiation floor and your gold standard and your pivot. You will not entertain any offers that are below this number. And when I say that, I mean it for real, for real. Like when I pivoted from counselor to professor, the very first offer I got was about 10K below my walkaway number. And I said no to that offer with nothing else lined up. Like I had some interviews come in, yes, but I did not have another offer lined up. And I said no. Like till today, that is still one of the biggest faith moves I have ever made in my life. And God came through because I did end up getting a job that gave me more than my walkaway number. So when I say it's his walk away, I really mean it. Anything below this number is a no. It's an automatic no. So you know your numbers, you create your lavish budget, you create your salary range, and then you set your walkaway number. Then the fifth thing you're going to do so that you can pivot industries while keeping your salary or raising it is to then research what you are worth in the new industry. Research what you are worth in this new industry that you're pivoting into. When you have clarity about the roles, so if you haven't listened to the other episodes in this series about pivoting to a new industry, I definitely recommend that you do that because I've talked about things like figuring out your values, your interests, your skills, how to get clarity so you don't feel stuck, and how to even determine between different options. So let's say you have clarity about what you want to pivot into. You have like 2 to 3 roles on deck that you're considering. Then you need to research those roles and anything that doesn't pay in your range that you have set, it doesn't even make sense to move further or to start applying to those roles. Just pick something else. Like, it really comes down to that. It's just a case of, if I have said I need to make 100K in my next pivot and a job is listed as 85K, I'm not even reading it. I'm not even reading the job description. I'm not even reading what it takes, because the money already is not in my role. So I need to move on. And so you have to make sure that you actually pick a target role and a target industry that makes sense for your walkaway number. Because historically, we also know that some industries historically just pay more than others. Tech will pay more than education. You know, healthcare might pay more than government, or depending on the role you have in government. But just know your number and pick a role in an industry that makes sense. And if you're wondering, okay, how can you do that research to figure out, you know, what do industries pay? What does this role earn? You can use tools. Like, there's a bunch of different salary tools. I share a lot of them inside my program, FYFC, but things like Glassdoor, salary.com, Payscale, you can use those to research salaries for roles. And then when you're doing your research, you can filter by job title, by industry, by years of experience, and by location is an important one. Very important one, because what you would be paid for the same role living in New York is not what you would be paid living in St. Louis. And rightly, you shouldn't, because the cost of living is different. And a lot of organizations do cost of living adjustments when they're paying your salary. So thinking about where you are geographically really matters. And you want to look at the total comp range when you're doing your research, not just the base salary. One way of figuring out these numbers that is very, very underutilized is really just talking to people. Like, don't be afraid to talk about money. Ask people in your network, what is a realistic salary range for someone with my background moving into this role? You would be surprised at how willing and open people are to sharing real numbers. And the reason why you want to do this research is that when you're pivoting, you don't want to negotiate or ask for salary based on your current industry's pay scale. You need to negotiate based on the market value of the role you're stepping into. Okay? Every job has a market value based on years of experience, industry, geographic location. And I said this earlier, so let's say you've been a teacher for 10 years and you've been making 55K. If you're pivoting to corporate training, you can't anchor your negotiation in teacher salary scales, because those industries are fundamentally different. You have to go in thinking about what corporate trainers with 10 years of instructional design experience in your geographic location make, which from your research, you might see, oh, that's actually between 75 and 90K. Now, imagine if you hadn't done that research and you just went in thinking, okay, I make 55K now. If I can at least keep making 55K or even 60K, I'll be good. Meanwhile, your peers with similar experience at that range are making 75K to start. You would have ended up lowballing yourself. So once you know your numbers and you know the market that you're stepping into, you then go in with a different mindset, because you can see your value that you're bringing to the table and what it's worth. And then now your job is to position yourself in your job search so that they can see the value that you're bringing in. Because again, remember, if you're like most of my clients, your fear from the beginning of this was that, oh, because I don't have the direct experience, I'm going to have to take a pay cut and get paid less just to get my foot in the door. But no, once you know that, okay, hold up, I have the transferable skills, I have relevant experience that I'm going to translate and it's going to allow me to come in quickly, right? It's like, I'm going to come in and I'm going to be moving. They're not going to have to train me for too long. I'm going to be solving problems immediately. I know the value I'm bringing. Now they need to see your value. You have to position your experience as high value, even without direct experience. And so we can call that your sixth step. Okay, so step one was know your numbers. Step two was map out your realistic, lavish budget. Step three was create your salary range. Step four, set your walkaway number. Step five, research what you're worth in the new industry. So step six is now and then position your experience as high value. Don't go in cowering because you don't have direct experience, or you indirectly discount yourself, right? Oh, I'm just so glad. I'm just so glad for this opportunity. I'm so glad they're willing to take a chance on me. I know I don't have direct experience. I'm just so happy. No. We don't do that here. Show up confidently. You've been working for over 10 years. You are a valuable employee, direct experience or not. So position yourself as bringing high value to the table, even if you don't have direct experience, this is where knowing their language matters. If you haven't listened to my last episode where I talked about how you can make a pivot without needing a new degree, you should definitely listen to that episode, because that's where I talked about how the key is to know the language of the new industry. And I shared specific ways for you to learn the language of an industry. But when you have their language, you can position yourself as high value even without direct experience. And here are four ways that you can position yourself as a high value hire. First, lead with the problems that you solve, not the tasks that you have done. This is a very, very, very common problem I see with people job searching. You're talking too much about your tasks and your responsibilities and not talking enough about the problems you solved and the outcomes you caused. So you don't say, I was a teacher for 10 years. You say, I have 10 years of experience designing learning programs that improve knowledge retention and performance outcomes. Can you hear the difference? One of those is problem solution driven. The other is just what you did. Second, translate your accomplishments into business language, specifically the business language of the industry that you're going into. So for example, if you were going from education to corporate training, you wouldn't say increased student proficiency, you would say improved learner performance by 25%. If you were going from nonprofit to corporate, you wouldn't say managed a $500,000 grant budget, you would say oversaw a $500,000 P&L with zero budget overruns. If you were going from healthcare to operations, you wouldn't say coordinated patient care across five departments. You would say led cross-functional teams to optimize workflows and reduce bottlenecks. Like, these are all examples from actual client resumes that I've done. It's like, how do you use business language? What does the industry care about? Use that to talk about what you've done. It's not fibbing or lying. You're literally just talking about the exact thing you did using new language. And the third way that you can position yourself as a high value hire is to anchor your words. So whether you are writing, so cover letter, resume, or talking, interview, networking, anchor your words to the value that you will create when they hire you, not the experience that you don't have. Again, I know that you're worried about not having direct experience. That worry can be there while you still approach it strategically. So when you're talking about your work, talk about the value that you're bringing, the value that you're creating, not about the experience that you don't have. Don't be like, oh, even though I don't have 5 years of experience, I will. No. Focus on, look, when you hire me, here's the ROI you're going to get, right? Say things like, in my previous role, I reduced onboarding time by 40%, saving the company $150,000 annually. I will bring that same systems thinking approach to this role. Let them bring up a lack of direct experience if needed, but your goal is to talk about your value. And then the fourth and final way that you can position yourself as a high value hire is to use your outsider perspective as an asset, not a liability. So like, it's a mindset of, because I'm coming from this specific industry, I am bringing fresh eyes to the problem. So I can spot inefficiencies differently. I can see things that other people might miss, and I can propose solutions that are novel that you haven't tried before because I have a new lens, right? The fact that you are an outsider is an asset, not a liability. And inside my Career Clarity and Job Search Coaching Program, Find Your Fulfilling Career, FYFC, I actually help you position your value and your skills during our coaching sessions. We have resume templates. We have interview scripts. That way, you won't start over with your salary when I help you pivot industries in FYFC. You actually, most of my clients, you actually increase your salary. And then the seventh thing is, you need to negotiate when you get an offer. Even if the offer meets or is more than your walkaway number, you need to negotiate. Like, that is literally just a rule of thumb I want you to approach in your career or embrace, I should say. Always, 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 always negotiate no matter what. Negotiating is not an option. Don't accept the first offer. Don't let your fear of not having direct experience lead to you lowballing yourself. Let them say no to you. Don't say no to yourself. Like if I think of my first two career pivots from healthcare data entry to counselor, and then from counselor to professor, if I hadn't negotiated on both of those, I would have left a lot of money on the table. Because in the first role, when I negotiated and they increased my salary, come to find out, what they had actually initially offered me was on the wrong pay scale. I was coming into that role with a master's degree. I should have been offered more. Imagine if I had not negotiated, I would have taken a lowball salary. Second role, I just negotiated my little butt off. And I remember my supervisor would say that I was a shark. She's like, nobody had ever negotiated with her that way before. But I got higher offers both times. So imagine if I had not negotiated. I've done the math before. Over the span of my career, I have made about $200,000 more that I would not have made if I had not negotiated. So that's like the seventh step, is regardless of what happens, when it comes time that you are getting an offer, you always negotiate. And inside FYFC, I teach you how to negotiate. I give you negotiation scripts, like literally word for word what to say in a negotiation conversation. I even give you scripts on what to do, or rather what to say, if when you ask for more money, they say no. Not to mention, you get weekly coaching on negotiation strategies, and you can get real-time coaching. Like while you are actively negotiating an offer, you can get real-time coaching with me using our support ticket feature. So if negotiating is something that, you know, makes you nervous or you're anxious, you're like, what do I say? What if they say no? How do I approach it? We solve for that in FYFC, and I give you everything you need to ask for more money. Now, I know that you might be listening and thinking, okay, this sounds great, but what happens when I'm in the interview and they're like, we love your background, but you don't have, you know, direct experience in this industry. How do we know you can do this job, right? Like, what if they ask you straight up, you don't have direct experience? I know that this is like the question that makes people panic during a pivot. And if you don't know how to answer it confidently, what ends up happening is that you'll either get defensive, or you will apologize for your lack of experience, or worse, you will lowball yourself on salary because you think you have to prove yourself first. I don't want you to do any of that. So let me show you exactly how I would handle this objection so that you can walk out of the interview with them believing that you are the right person for this role. So you're going to use like a three-part structure to respond to that question. First, you're going to acknowledge their concern without apologizing for it. Then you're going to reframe your experience as an asset. And then you're going to prove you can do the job with a specific example. So now let me break each of these down for you. Like, how would you answer that question? Acknowledge without apologizing. So don't say, you know, you're right, I don't have experience, or I know I'm not the typical candidate, or I'm willing to learn. No. If you say any of those things, you are confirming their doubts and positioning yourself as less valuable. And the goal here is to position yourself as a high value hire. So instead, here's how you can acknowledge, some ways that you can acknowledge their concern without apologizing. You can say, you know what? That's a great question. You're right that I haven't worked in, you know, finance industry or in healthcare specifically, but what I do have is, and then you will go on to list what you have. Or you can say, I appreciate you bringing that up. While I am new to this industry, I'm not new to the core skill or problem they need solved, right? So you might say, while I'm new to the educational industry, I'm not new to instructional design and performance improvement. The reason why this works is you're acknowledging the question without saying it's a problem, right? You're still controlling the conversation by just acknowledging, yeah, you're right, I don't have experience. So that's the acknowledge without apologizing. Then what you add is to then reframe your experience as an asset. So this is where you flip the script, right? You turn your lack of experience into a strength. And you can talk about how you're bringing a fresh perspective. You can talk about how you're bringing cross-industry perspective, or how you're bringing proven transferable skills, or how you're just bringing like zero bad habits, right? You can say something like, one advantage I have over hiring someone, or I should, yeah, like let's stick with that education example, right? So one advantage of hiring someone outside the education industry is that I don't come with any preconceived notions about the right way to do things. I'm not bringing any bad habits from 10 years at a competitor. I have fresh energy, proven skills, and a willingness to learn your systems quickly. Not to mention, And this, not to mention, is where we go to the end of proving you can do the job with a specific example, right? So this is like the closer, okay? You've reframed their concerns. Now you need to give them proof. And when you're giving them proof, think about talking about a specific example that you can share with them of how you have solved a similar problem in a different role, right? In my previous role, we faced a similar challenge when blank happened. Here's what I did. Talk about your transferable skills and your solution. As a result, here's what we achieved. Then connect it back to their role. That same, you know, problem solving solution, that same skill, that same way of thinking is what is going to help me in this role. I'm bringing those same skills into this role. And so this industry might be the same, but I have experience solving these problems. And I can almost hear you saying, oh my gosh, that sounds cocky. No. When you're interviewing, this is literally like the only time that you really like you should be bragging on yourself. You should be selling yourself. So you're saying, yeah, I hear you. I don't have direct experience, but I'm bringing in a new lens. And here's how I've done something similar. And I'm going to bring those skills and I'm going to smash this role. I'm going to kick this role in the butt. Like that's the attitude that you're bringing in. And I know that that was like, okay, that was a lot, right? That was convoluted. So I actually wrote down one specific example that I've had a client use similarly to this, but I modified it a little bit. So let me walk you through this using an example of, imagine a nonprofit program manager who's trying to pivot into corporate, okay? So they might ask, okay, you've been in nonprofit for 12 years, corporate moves faster, we have different priorities. How do you know you'll be successful? So if you take everything I said, here's a detailed response of what that might sound like. I appreciate you bringing that up. And while, yes, I am new to the corporate space, I am not new to managing complex projects with tight deadlines, to working with limited resources, and to navigating multiple stakeholders, which is exactly what this role requires. One thing that's interesting is that nonprofit often operates with less margin for error than corporate because our budgets tend to be smaller and our impact is directly tied to funding. So one thing I've learned over my years of experience is that to be incredibly strategic about the resource allocation, my way of communicating with stakeholders, and how to hit deadlines. So for example, last year, I managed a $2 million grant-funded program with 15 different partner organizations, and we had a 9-month timeline to launch. And if we missed our deadline, we would have lost that funding because it was really tied to that 9-month deadline. So what I did was I built the project plan, I coordinated across all our partners, I identified the risks early, and I delivered the program 2 weeks ahead of schedule, which actually led to us securing an additional $500K in funding from a different funder. That same project management rigor, stakeholder connection, and results focus is exactly what I will bring to this role. And I understand that, yes, the mission might be different here, but the skills and results that I will be driving are very similar to the skills and results I was driving in my previous role. That's what that would sound like. And hopefully you could see how I brought that, like, acknowledge, reframe, share a concrete example. That's how you can position yourself as a high value hire if they directly talk about your lack of experience. Ultimately, the truth about your salary during a pivot is that you're not asking them to pay you to learn. You're asking them to pay you for the value that you already bring. Yes, you're new to the industry, but you're not new to skills like problem solving, leadership, stakeholder management, driving results. Like, those skills are worth money. And when you own that you have those skills, when you truly believe that you deserve to be paid well, you will pivot differently. You will talk about your work differently. You will negotiate differently, and you will increase your salary in your pivot. Like, I've had a client go from nonprofit to corporate with a $10,000 increase. Another client went from media to consumer goods with a $70K increase. Another client went from community management to Big Four consulting with a $35K increase. You don't need direct experience to increase your salary when you make a pivot. I've personally made 3 major career pivots, and every single time I increased my salary. Why? Because I did not see myself as a beginner in a new field. I saw myself as an experienced professional bringing a unique skill set to solve their unique problems And that is how I position myself to do the same. So hopefully you found this video helpful. I hope that it changed your perspective about how you think about making more money while pivoting in your career. And I hope it changed how you think about making more money while pivoting in your career. Thank you for listening to this episode all the way. I hope you found it helpful. And if you did, please don't forget to leave us a review or a rating on whatever platform you're listening on. It really does help the channel grow, and I will catch you on the next episode. All right, let's talk about Find Your Fulfilling Career, or FYFC. If you're new here, FYFC is my 12-month career clarity and job search coaching program. It is designed for women who are stuck in draining, unfulfilling jobs and ready to pivot into work that actually excites them without starting over and without applying to hundreds of jobs. Inside this program, you will get crystal clear on your next career move using my visa framework, learn how to market yourself into a new role or industry, and land a higher paying job that aligns with your values and your life. My clients consistently increase their salaries by 25K, 55K, even 135K. They rediscover who they are, their skills, land jobs they actually thrive in, and finally have the work-life balance they've been craving. Now, here's what makes this round of enrollment different. This is the only time in 2026 that I am offering three fast action launch bonuses. If you enroll in FYFC during the 48-hour bonus window, you will get a one-on-one 90-minute career pivot call with me where we're going to pick your target role, analyze a real job posting, and map out your exact transferable skills together. A done-for-you career pivot resume. I will personally write your new resume that positions you perfectly for your target industry, and a personalized interview question bank, which includes 10 custom questions with responses based on my proven frameworks to help you ace your pivot interview. These bonuses are not available at any other time and will speed up your pivot timeline by 2 months. So if you're ready to stop feeling stuck and start thriving in a career that actually fits who you are, go to findyourfulfillingcareer.com and register for the free live launch training where I'll teach you my three proven strategies for successful career pivots and walk you through exactly how the program works. You have to be registered for the free training to qualify for the bonuses. Again, that URL is findyourfulfillingcareer.com. I can't wait to see you there.